The exodus of the Israelites from the captivity of the Egyptians is possibly one of the most well-read and known events recorded in the Bible. And there are many aspects about which we could spend time considering, but I'd like to outline the event and see if we might come to a conclusion which helps us in our confidence in God. The Israelites had been in Egypt for a number of generations and remarkably were able to keep their identity. In our day, the word is integration. When people come into our country, and indeed, although we see immigrants keeping some of their customs, increasingly they adopt the way of life of the country in which they enter. But the Israelites had not arrived in Egypt as willing immigrants. They had been captured and held prisoners in an alien land for anything between 300 to 480 years, depending how long a generation is calculated. But through the years of captivity, there was obviously a working relationship. Seemingly endless plagues had convinced Pharaoh that these Israelites were more trouble than they were worth. So he decided to let the Israelites go. In no uncertain terms, Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron in the night, and as we read in Exodus 12, verse 31, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites, go worship the Lord as you've requested." This is in response to the words of Moses in Exodus chapter 5. "The Lord, the God of Israel, says this, 'Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival to me in the desert.'" Pharaoh wasn't having any of that. He replied, "Who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I don't know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." Moses and Aaron persisted, "The God the Hebrews has met with us. Now let us take a 3-day journey into the desert to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God." But Pharaoh wasn't at all inclined to give the Israelites a 3 days holiday. He gave the order to make life even harder for the Israelites. And when they protested, Pharaoh was uncompromising. "Lazy, that's what you are, lazy. That's why you keep saying, 'Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord.' Now get to work." But Pharaoh began to see there was a connection between the plagues they were enduring and the Israelites. And finally, he listened to 80-year-old Moses and 83-year-old Aaron. Just an observation here. Age is no barrier to being used by God. Pharaoh, afraid of what the plagues were doing to his people, finally gave in to the demands of Moses and Aaron. Perhaps in a moment or two of panic, Pharaoh forgot that letting the Israelites go into the desert for 3 days without supervision, the Israelites would take advantage of that and realize they could actually escape. But it wasn't long before Pharaoh realized that without the Israelites' labor, the Egyptian economy would be brought to its knees, and he soon changed his mind. We read in verse 5 of chapter 14, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services." And so the pursuit of the Israelites by the Egyptian army began. And an angry Pharaoh meant business. He directed 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them, and set off to recapture the Israelites. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites. The Israelites were assured of God's presence during their journey. They saw his protecting presence by the visible sight of a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. We can understand something of the difficulty Moses had leading the Israelites. They weren't always the easiest of people to convince. And we read how they only had to glimpse the Egyptian army gaining ground on them to complain to Moses about him leading them only to be killed in the wilderness. There's a poignancy in their words. Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? Can't you just hear the doom-mongers and doubters who always seem to serve us when life gets tough? Pillar of cloud, pillar of fire, God's presence. Even today, some commentators try to explain away the significant signs of the presence of God as some natural phenomenon. Yet God is so reassuring to us when we trust him. The reply of Moses to the people was, "Don't be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring to you today." It's so human, isn't it, to doubt when life gets difficult. And we question, does God really answer prayer? Why should God deliver me when others are suffering as much as we are? Hasn't God given human means to solve the world's problems? Isn't the day of miracles something associated with days past? I'm sure you've heard such comments from people who are doubting God's ability or his presence. But let's continue the Exodus account a little further. We remember when God chose Moses to lead the Israelites, Moses wasn't exactly thrilled at the prospect. He protested to the Lord, "Oh, please ask someone else. I'm no great speaker." I'm sure we could find similar excuses for not doing what God wants us to do, especially if we have to exert a lot of faith in him. But if God chooses us, he will equip us. And Moses' brother Aaron was on hand to do the speeches if and when necessary, although the very fact that God provided Aaron for Moses, Moses seems then to speak with commendable directness when the need arose. So we reach the amazing detail of the Exodus we can read in these chapters. By anyone's calculations, and they do vary, which isn't surprising when we're dealing with events some 3,470 years ago, Moses was leading a huge number of people. Taking the figures given in Exodus 12, there were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Now, assuming the Israelite population follows modern trends, there could have been an equal number of females to the 600,000 men. But if we bear in mind that the Egyptians had a very nasty habit of killing males, the female population could have been much higher. But if we assume there was an equal number of females to men, that would amount to 1,200,000 altogether. A population needs 2.5% to sustain it, but we read in Exodus chapter 1 verse 7, "But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, and the land was filled with them." So, again, on the assumption of 4 children per adult couple, we have 2,400,000 children. So, that's 3,600,000. But we read, "Many other people went up with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds." On that estimate, there would have been between 4 and 6 million people exiting from Egypt, led by Moses. I'll leave the actual crossing of the Red Sea to perhaps another time, and for just a few moments concentrate on the statistics. The Exodus has been called the biggest mathematical miracle in the world. Moses and this vast number of people were in the desert, but what was he going to do with them? They had to be fed, and feeding that number of people obviously needs a lot of food. According to a quartermaster in the army, it's reported that Moses would have to find 1,500 tons of food each day. And even in our day, that would require 2 freight trains each a mile long. Bearing in mind that they were in the desert, they would need firewood to cook the food. That would take 4,000 tons of wood and a few more freight trains each a mile long, just for one day. If that isn't mind-blowing, we have to remember that they were in the desert for 40 years, and they would need water, if only to drink and wash a few dishes. That would take 11 million gallons of water a day. And again, using our calculations today, that would require freight trains with water tanks 180 miles long just to deliver the water. Supposing that statistical nightmare could be overcome, then they faced the crossing through the Red Sea at night. If they went in a narrow path, double file, the line would be 800 miles long and require 35 days and nights to get through. So there had to be space made in the Red Sea, 3 miles wide, so that they could walk 5,000 abreast to get over in one night. But if that wasn't a big enough problem, there's another one. Each time they camped at the end of the day, they needed a site of around 750 square miles. So here's a question. Do you think Moses figured all this out before he left Egypt? It's not likely, is it? Moses believed in God, and God took care of these things for him. Why would we think God has any problem taking care of our needs?